Welcome to Straight Talk with My OBMD Podcast. Join me for a bi-weekly discussion on topics most relevant to women's health today. We are your source for medically accurate, real-world advice in all things related to your health and well-being as a woman. From menses to menopause, we've got you covered. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Smith, a fully practicing, board-certified OBGYN physician with close to 20 years experience. I am also the founder of the website that is 100% dedicated to women's health, myobmd.org. At myobmd.org, we write on all aspects related to women's health. Listen to our podcast, visit our website, subscribe to our newsletter, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, myobmd.org. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Smith, the proud founder of the nonprofit website, myobmd.org. At myobmd.org, we are a physician-led, nonprofit publishers of women's health information. Everything you see, hear, and read on our site are written by physicians. So you can trust that the information you're receiving is 100% accurate, 100% real world. myobmd.org. Now, for today's podcast, we are going to be talking about insomnia. So, we are going to be talking about what defines it, what causes it, and what are the best proven approaches for treatment of insomnia. Stay tuned. Welcome back to My OBMD. This is Dr. Smith, and today we're talking about insomnia. So let's first start by talking about the actual word insomnia. So in meaning absence of slumber. So you are not sleeping or you are not sleeping well. You're not having a restful night's sleep. It's not restorative. You're waking up feeling tired, feeling groggy, feeling grumpy. So those are some of the things that occur with insomnia just because you may be in bed, but you're really not resting. And the definition. So it's okay to have an occasional sleepless night. Sometimes this occurs from an anxiety. So if we are anxious about an upcoming event, maybe you're scheduled to do a presentation or a talk and you're nervous about that, that's normal. And sometimes we have good anxiety where you're just so excited about something positive that's happening. It may be your wedding, it may be your daughter's wedding, your child's wedding, something that's something big is happening on a positive scale. And that also creates some level of fear and anxiety, albeit it's a positive thing. And that can cause you to not rest adequately or not have a restful night's sleep. And that is also normal. The medical definition of insomnia is if you have at least 3 nights per week of sleepless nights or nights where you're not getting restful sleep, and this occurs for 3 months or more. So 3 months or more where you're not having a restful sleep and it is occurring on at least 3 or more nights per week. This is significant. This is significant, and at least 10 to 30% of the adult population in the U.S. suffers from insomnia. They experience insomnia. And this is significant because that lack of restorative sleep will spill over into your daytime activities. And so we know that when you're not sleeping well, you're not getting adequate rest, we tend to be grumpy. We tend to be a little short-tempered. We may not smile as much. There are certain things that are, it changes your demeanor for the day because you just have not rested as well. And so that then spills over into our ability to function and perform well. And it spills over into our relationships because, of course, who wants to be around a grumpy, short-tempered person, right? So let's talk about how insomnia develops. Well, insomnia can develop in different ways. First, let me pause and reflect that insomnia is only one type of sleep disorder. There are many different types of sleep disorders. And our website on myobmd.org, we have addressed the issue of sleep disorders and its many, many, many different diagnoses under the umbrella of sleep disorders. And also insomnia is addressed separately because it tends to be more common. But just be aware that just because you're having sleepless nights, you can have other medical conditions that may be causing this or other sleep disorders that has very similar symptoms. So back to insomnia. What are some of the conditions that can lead up to this diagnosis? One I alluded to before are any mental health conditions. So depression and anxiety, these are commonly associated with insomnia because it's really hard to sleep. One, when we're anxious, you're anxious about anything, whether good or bad, it's going to make it difficult for your body to wind down and rest. And the other is depression, and depression sometimes creates anxiety because there's worry and there's excessive fear. Whether that worry or fear is warranted, it doesn't matter. It's there, right? And if it's there, your body is experiencing this in its fullness. And so this can create some issues with you getting a restful night's sleep. There are certain things that we can put in our bodies that can affect our ability to sleep well. So one is alcohol, one of the more common substances that are used because, of course, it's accessible legally and it's socially acceptable. And so folks that are drinking alcohol may find that they may have a difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep. And this can be a little bit of a paradox because for some people, when they drink alcohol, they become sleepy. And so some people drink alcohol in order to help them fall asleep. And you may have that effect initially, but with time, you may notice that one, it's no longer helping you to fall asleep, and two, it's actually having the opposite effect where it's causing you to stay awake. And so alcohol is one of those things that if you're having difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, you may want to just assess how much alcohol intake you're having and whether that is the appropriate amount for you. It may be causing more symptoms than you are aware. There are some medications that we take that can disturb our sleep. So, for instance, prescription stimulants for people with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. If you're an adult who's been diagnosed with ADHD and you're given the medications are stimulating, and so that can also have an effect where it is causing you to stay awake. It's causing you to have a hard time falling asleep. A common over-the-counter regimen that folks use are stimulating drinks containing caffeine, so energy drinks, for instance. contain caffeine. Of course, coffee, certain teas contain caffeine, and that can also increase our risk of developing insomnia. Because even if it's not causing it initially when you first started, as you continue to take these, as we continue to take these drinks or these substances, these things can go on to start creating sleep disturbances. Those are a few things that you need to be aware of if you have noticed that you are developing insomnia. Other medication is appetite suppressants. So appetite suppressants, they are often used as a means of losing weight. Some are prescription, some are over-the-counter, but they all have the same stimulating effect, similar to energy drinks and caffeine. So you want to be aware of how these medicines may be affecting you personally. Antidepressants. If you have been diagnosed with depression, we just talked about depression, that sometimes depression can lead to anxiety. And they kind of go hand in hand. And though that combination typically creates a problem with falling asleep. So some antidepressants can also, unfortunately, add to that issue. So a class of medicine called MAO inhibitors can be used as antidepressant, and sometimes these medicines can cause insomnia. Thankfully, the MAO inhibitors are not as common as they were in the past, just because in the medical community, we discovered that the MAO inhibitors, they react to so many different, not just medication, but foods, and can cause side effects. And so these medications are not commonly used anymore. Some other antidepressants, though, that are more commonly used that can cause sleep disturbances are fluoxetine, which is also called Prozac, bupropion, or Wellbutrin, and venlafaxine, which is Effexor, and protriptyline, which is Vivactil. So some of those more commonly used antidepressant can cause some sleep disturbances. Another family of medicines that allows that is our beta blockers. We use them to control blood pressure, and they're also used for performance anxiety. So sometimes if you feel like you're nervous before an event, you tell your doctor may say, hey, we can give you this medicine to kind of help calm your nerves before you perform or before you do your presentation. And often the go-to drug for that purpose is a beta blocker. And so typically if you're just taking it as a one-time for a one-time event, it really is unlikely to cause insomnia because your exposure is very limited. But if it's something that you're doing on a more persistent basis, then that is something to be aware of. The other drug are opioids, and opioids are pain medicine. So if you are a chronic opioid user, if you're taking it for a long term, even though they initially cause you to be sleepy, with long-term use, they can have the opposite effect where they can just start disrupting your sleep pattern. So those are some of the things that can actually add to insomnia that we want to be aware of. So some of the stimulating medicines, such as those used for ADHD and those used for narcolepsy, some appetite suppressants, the antidepressants, the caffeine, the energy drinks, steroids. I did not mention steroid use. So steroids can sometimes add to insomnia as well. And people that use steroids chronically tend to be asthmatics or those with an autoimmune disease. So those medications you just want to be aware of. Okay, that if you're having a sleep disturbance, you just may want to talk to your doctor about whether you want to change the timing of when you're taking these medicines so they're not close to bedtime, or adjusting the dose to a dose that is less problematic for you for that problem. So those are some of the things to be aware of. And what happens if you have insomnia? Is it just a matter of sleep? No, it is not, right? Because our bodies need sleep. Sleep is not a luxury. Sleep is a necessity of a healthy body. It is part of staying healthy. It's part of a healthy routine. So chronic insomnia, where you're having trouble sleeping at least 3 nights a week for 3 or more months, this can affect your quality of life and this can affect your overall health. So when we are chronically sleep deprived, it is quite stressful. It is very, very stressful because sleep is a necessary part of life. And so when you go to bed with the expectation that you will fall asleep and you are constantly failing to fall asleep, or you're failing to have a rest that is restorative, I know I keep using that term, but your rest has to be able to restore your strength and your well-being. So if that is being constantly being interrupted, that process of restoring your restful state is something that is constantly being interrupted. You're never quite achieving that. With time, it can become mentally taxing. So it's not unusual for chronic insomniacs to develop depression because they are just feeling so overwhelmed with life. Their lack of sleep just has their nerves on end. And so it becomes a problem with our mental health, keeping our mental health in balance if you are a chronic insomniac. The other conditions that insomniacs are prone to are heart disease and diabetes. You know, it's truly seen sometimes where people make the comment, oh, you know, I'm going to catch up on my sleep on the weekends. Oh, who needs rest? Rest is for the weak. And I mean, surely these are tongue-in-cheek comments. However, it really reflects the fact that we are not maybe taking this condition as seriously as we should, whether it's for us or others. We want to make sure we are aware that this is a serious, potentially serious medical condition. Serious enough that for some, it can make them even suicidal because their lack of sleep is just so profound. And it becomes such a burden to carry on without sleep that for some, the depression becomes severe, placing them at risk for even suicide. And so it's something that we truly ought to take very seriously. But it's not without hope. It's a condition that can be treated. It can be corrected. So let's also recognize that this is something that is not a hopeless condition. Yes, you can treat it. And yes, you can get to the state where you're going to bed and waking up fully rested. So the first thing you want to do, if you notice you have insomnia, you have to see your doctor, right? Because like I said, this is a medical condition. This is not something that you need to feel the need to tackle on your own. This is something that we can absolutely assist you with. And that is our role as physicians, is to assist you with your health. And what could be more important to your health than having a restful night's sleep? That is just a critical piece of the puzzle. And if that is missing, the rest of the health puzzle is in jeopardy. So the first thing your doctor is going to do when you go to your doctor and you describe your issue of not being able to sleep or not getting a restful night's sleep and that this has been ongoing, they're going to first just talk to you about your sleep habits, what's called your sleep hygiene, right? We're going to talk to you about, what are you doing right before bed? What are you eating? What are you drinking? And so maybe by tweaking some of these habits, that can correct the problem, and that may be all that is needed in order to correct this problem. So here are some of the things that we're going to try to stress when trying to improve your sleep hygiene and improve your chances of getting a restful night's sleep. One, as much as possible, try to go to bed and get up at the same time every day, weekday and weekends. So whatever that bedtime is, try to stick with it as much as possible, both on the weekday and on the weekends, okay? Number two, avoid taking naps during the day, okay? And this may seem counterintuitive, but if you're not having a restful night's sleep, then it will likely make you drowsy during the day, and so you're going to be tempted to just take a nap. Try to resist that urge to take the nap because you want to be tired at night, okay? The third tip is to wait until you feel sleepy to actually get into the bed, okay? So you try to get yourself to the point where you're feeling fatigued before you get into the bed. Getting into the bed when you're not tired, sometimes that can kind of set you up for frustration because you're lying there and you're trying to, oh, I should be sleeping. Oh, it's been 10 minutes. Oh my goodness, it's been 12 minutes. Now it's 15 minutes and I haven't fallen asleep. And so that's just going to create a cycle where you're working against yourself and it's going to make it harder for you to fall asleep. So try to get yourself tired before you go to bed. The fourth tip is to make sure your room is dark. Ooh, I love a dark room. I love a dark room because that darkness, I just feel like a bear in a cave and I could just sleep for hours. The darker, the better. I don't want to see my hand in front of my face. I don't want to see anything. So make sure your room is dark. Make sure it's quiet and make sure it's a comfortable temperature for you. Some people like it on the cool side. Some people like it on the warmer side. Whatever it is you need to aid in that comfortability so that you're not disturbed or distracted by your discomfort. The fifth tip is to make sure you exercise regularly. So just like how you want to go to bed at the same time every day, wake up at the same time every day, you also want to be consistent in your physical activity because it does help to make you feel tired, okay? I mean, we know this with children, right? We take the kids to the park. I always remember when my little one was a baby, we would go to the park. Believe it or not, the busiest time at the park was like 6 to 7 p.m., right? Because everybody wants to get their kids tired for bed. And so it was just such a running joke because all the parents would look at each other and smile because we all knew what we were doing. We were trying to get these little ones tired for bed. And same with us bigger ones, right? Excuse me, older ones. So try to get yourself tired for bed by exercising. However, for us, you do not want to exercise within 4 hours of your bedtime. So try to time it so that you're actually exercising prior to that point. If it's within 4 hours of sleep, then maybe forego the exercise for that day. Do it another day. But you do want to make exercise a part of your sleep routine. Avoid alcohol near bedtime, right? You thought I was going to say avoid alcohol altogether. Okay, you can breathe. I did not say that. But avoid alcohol near your bedtime, okay? Because it can be stimulating. It can. And not only that, alcohol is a diuretic, and that means it makes you pee. So it's going to be hard to sleep if you're constantly interrupting to go to the bathroom. So avoid alcohol near your bedtime. Avoid smoking. Tobacco also can be stimulating, and so you want to avoid smoking at night. Avoid large meals. When we eat a large meal, you eat a large meal, you may feel like a nice fat cat, right? I'm going to rest. I'm going to go to bed. But what happens is our body is so busy digesting that meal. And that digestive process can become disturbing. especially if it causes dyspepsia or if it causes heartburn. So avoiding a large meal can be helpful, because if you eat a large meal, you lay down, you know, heartburn is likely to follow that because you want to stay upright for some time after eating. And two, just your body digesting the food, that can cause, that's some activity going on within your body that may be counter to you having a good night's sleep. So try to avoid or limit, you know, avoid the large meals at night. And definitely you want to limit the amount of fluids that you're having as you're approaching your bedtime, because again, you're going to be that, all of that fluid has to be processed. It has to go through your kidneys, going to go to your bladder. When your bladder gets full, guess what? It's like, bing, 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 wake up, bing, bing, wake up. We need to go to the bathroom. And so here you are in the night, the middle of a nice dream, and then you're having to wake up to go to the bathroom. And if that's happening repeatedly, then it becomes a nuisance, and that becomes a hindrance to you having a restful night's sleep, right? Because you never really get into that nice deep stage of rest. You're still into that light stage of rest. And so you want to be able to rest uninterrupted for several hours so you can enter into that nice REM stage, okay? Do not go to bed hungry, okay? Because the hunger, that can also cause some issues. Now, I don't feel this is as disturbing as going to bed with after having a large meal, to be honest with you. Yes, you don't want to, of course, have hunger pangs or be distracted by your hunger if you're having stomach pains and cramps. Most people are not going to go to bed in that state. So if you need to have something, just have something light, you know, maybe some liquid, something to drink, something that's easily digestible and in a small volume. So you don't want to go to bed hungry, and you also don't want to have a large meal before you go to bed. Screen time. You know, I really have never understood anything about the evening news, because I just refuse to listen to the news at that hour. But some people do, okay? But you do want to avoid the screen, whether it is your phone, your tablet, the television, as you're going to bed, because it can disrupt the process of you getting into a deep night's sleep. And so you want to minimize that. You want to remove any of these things that creates obstacles to you falling asleep and staying asleep. Now, the other tip is to address your worries before you go to bed. And we've kind of alluded to this as we spoke about the depression and anxiety, because we know that if you are having these things weigh in on your mind, then it can create so much energy that energy is just keeping you awake. And so you really want to find some way to kind of temper those concerns at night before you go to bed, right? Don't go to bed tackling them. Try to, whether you need to call someone to discuss that, whether you need to pray about it, whatever your spiritual resource is, however it is that you cope with anxious moments, which are a part of life. You want to address that before you actually get into bed so that you're leaving it at you're leaving it as you cross that threshold into your bedroom, right? So that is not going with you into that space where you are now entering in for the purpose of getting a good night's sleep. Now, let's say you've gone to bed and you anticipated a good night's sleep, but for some reason it's just not working and you're still up 20 minutes, you're still up. If after 20 minutes you find that you are having a hard time sleeping, get out of the bed. Get out of the bed, do something else until you feel sleepy, and then you return to bed, okay? but you don't want to do the activity in the bed. The bed should only be used for two things. One of them is sleeping. Okay? If these things are not working, your doctor, of course, will go over these things with you. If they're unable to go over these things with you in detail, they may refer you to a counselor who would then go over them, who would then review them with you in more detail. And then if they're not successful, they can further talk about counseling to address anxieties or fears. And one of the more effective counseling, one of the more effective counseling for this type of medical condition is called cognitive behavioral therapy. And you all, I love cognitive behavioral therapy. I refer patients for cognitive behavioral therapy so much. And even my friends, if I'm having a friend that's having a hard time, I really do like this counseling method that has evolved. And cognitive behavioral therapy is really effective. The reason it's really effective is because it's really used as a guidance tool. And so you go to the cognitive behavioral therapist and they are walking you through the process so that you are able to come up with a solution to the problem that you have stated. So you are now the owner of the solution being promoted. So rather than them telling you, why don't you try this or why don't you try that, they kind of walk you through it. And here is what maybe a cognitive behavioral therapy session may sound like, right? So you go to them and they say, and you say, hey, I'm just having such a hard time sleeping and, you know, it's really disturbing and it's really affecting my relationships and so forth. And they'll talk to you and they'll say, well, what do you think is the cause of that? Okay, well, I've been really XYZ. My parent has been ill, or I've been really worried at work about my promotion, or I have financial issues that are really kind of weighing down on me. Whatever it is that you feel may be causing some degree of anxiety, okay? Or they may go through and say, hey, okay, so how are you dealing with that? And then they keep kind of going until they are asking you, now they're asking you, well, what do you think would work best? Okay, if you think, well, it may work best if I, you know, if you're having, let's say, a sick parent, maybe I can help, maybe I can get some family members to kind of help me with this or talk it through with them. So you are the one that is coming up with, you're now acknowledging ways and solutions that are befitting to you for this particular condition. And so it's very effective because really you're the one that has the greatest vantage point of knowing what is going on with this issue. And so you are the best one to determine what's the best solution. And they'll say, well, when do you think you can start this? What are some of the perceived, what are some barriers that you may see coming up that may hinder your progress towards this? So those are some of the aspects of cognitive behavioral therapy. Other things that they may try to walk you through are relaxation exercise. One is progressive muscle relaxation. And you guys, I've placed in our article on insomnia, I found a really great YouTube video of, I want to say it's John Hopkins that did a really great YouTube video of progressive muscle relaxation. And I've placed the link in our insomnia article on the website. So you are free to go to the site and access that video that way. I thought they did a really great job, and so I wanted to include that link. Guided imagery is another way to create, to help just relax our minds, right? The progressive muscle relaxation helps to relax our body. The guided imagery helps to just slow our mind down. And that is something that I use a lot, because I just find that my mind is just constantly going all the things that you need to do, all this, you know, it's just constantly. And so that guided imagery, I can say on a personal level that it works really well. If those things are not successful, your doctor will talk to you about adding medication. One thing I want to say about medication, medications are effective, but they are most effective if they're done along with these other behavioral aspects as well. So it's never a good idea to think that I can take a pill and a pill will solve all my problems. Even as a physician, I feel very confident in saying this. A pill is just a part of the regimen that we use to help us to get to better health. Even if it's for your blood pressure, even if it's for something, even if you're taking, let's say, chemotherapy, you still have to address your mental health, right? So medications are available as a tool to assist us in slowing the progression of disease or reversing the disease, right? But it is never the only tool that should be used in any condition. I do strongly believe that. So medications are another aspect that can be used. And I'm not going to go through all the different medications because who wants to hear that? But you can read about it on our site. So I hope I've been able to assist you with the understanding of the condition of insomnia and the ways in which you can address this. And please visit our website to have a more detailed view and reading of this condition, and as well as some really great links that can assist you in your walk to a restful night's sleep. Okay, so again, this is Dr. Dana Smith. I am the proud founder of the non-for-profit website myobmd.org, where we are a physician-led publishers of women's health information. I am so honored to have you have given me these 30 minutes of your time, and I look forward to talking to you again on the next I look forward to talking with you again on the next episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD. Thank you for listening to another episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD podcast. To learn more about this topic, visit our website at myobmd.org. Subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I can't wait to spend more time with you on our next episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD.